Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I am J.L. Covan, here as always, except for three episodes, with Producer Mike. Hello, Producer Mike.
And Frankie, the new pup
that's
in
right.
my life, who's sitting on my lap during this recording.
Very Mr. Bigglesworth style. What's that, yeah. J.L.? It's a reference to Austin Powers, big-time comedy series.
It's funny that that is now like an old person reference, Austin Powers.
Yeah.
For me too. I mean, it just feels like it's really showing my age.
Yeah. It's, I mean, since comedy died somewhere around 2014,
yeah.
you know, it's like an ancient art. Comedy yeah. is like an ancient art form, like
yeah.
folk tales. Like
right.
people used to pass down stories and lessons through something called humor.
Yeah.
Tell us about humor, grandfather. What do you mean, grandfather? I'm 8 years older than you, you prick. Anyway, guys, we got a lot to talk to today. We're going to talk Stephen Colbert. We're going to talk Trump. Trump, algorithm, baseball. Who said that?
Oh, no,
who
no,
said
no.
That?
Not baseball.
Who said that? My God, it's baseball.
Business about to pick up. It's baseball.
Oh, my God. Nobody gives a shit. But first, two things I want to talk about, and then we'll obviously have comedy talk. Frankie, how do you feel about comedy talk? Okay,
just like
owner,
the rest of the audience.
Like owner, like pup. But I want to talk about two things. My mom, by the time this episode goes up, my mom will have had surgery. She's having surgery. I won't get into exactly what it is. That's for Patreon. I violate HIPAA on Patreon, not on the unpaid fee. Had a very rough and tumble discussion between my mom, my brother, and me yesterday, where just to make it clear for everybody out there who's like, JL is very intense, very negative. I am the ray of sunshine in my family. Close your eyes and imagine that world, that dystopia. And so last night, it was so hostile.
Get it out.
That we had to get, you know, my mom needs to present her health proxy. She's 81, having, substantial surgery this week. So she, they wanted to bring her health proxy. And my mom said, well, Jean-Louis, that's my birth name, not JL, looks like you're the lucky one. Because she had forgotten, she made me the one who makes the decision in case anything goes awry.
Yeah.
Now, I know why she did that. I've always said to you, not always, I've said it like once or twice, that if we were the Godfather, my mom is not really Don Corleone. She's more like if Don Corleone were a more intense version of Sonny.
Yeah. If Sonny took over the family.
No.
Oh, no.
If Sonny were three times as angry and intense. That's
James Caan.
I'm regular Sonny. I'm the regular Sonny. I'm Sonny 1.0.
Yeah.
And my brother is Michael.
Okay.
There's no Fredos in our family. At least I don't think so, unless it's me. I think she made me the health proxy because she once said her best friend, who passed away a few years ago, had two sons and a daughter. She made the daughter her health proxy because she said the sons won't be able to do it. My daughter will. Like, if need be, we'll be able to make the decision. And I know my mom, and she talks big game. She wants to live.
Wait, leave what?
Live.
Okay, I thought you said leave.
Yeah, very big difference there.
Yeah.
Between leave and live
when it
comes to a health proxy.
Well, because I thought you meant leave this earth.
Yeah. Now, she has expressed to me what I would expect her to say, which is, I don't want to bop.
Yeah.
Okay, like a lot of people say.
Yeah.
But if that's really what she wanted, she would have made Governor Covan, Senator Covan, the health proxy. What she's really saying to me with this is, my younger son is as close to a daughter as I have, but in a soft way.
Right.
In a, oh no, he will keep me around. The baby will keep me around.
Yeah.
So let's hope it doesn't come to that. But yeah, always fun. Always fun when you get it handed to you. You know, your health proxy, your mom's health proxy handed to you by your mom.
Yeah.
With kind of a "now get the fuck out of here" attitude.
Sure.
So we're headed. We're good energy going into the surgery this week, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then I've got a more mundane complaint. Uh-huh. That's what the people really know me for in these intros.
It's a classic rain on your parade open.
Yeah. It used to be, hey, some bitch in Brooklyn didn't say excuse me.
Oh.
But I went to see the movie, I already forgot the name, Eddington, the Ari Aster film about like COVID in 2020 with Pedro Pascal and Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh boy.
Just came out. But you know who he is. He did Hereditary and Midsommar.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I want to say it's Eddington is the name. So we liked it to a certain extent. Like all his movies, you sit there for like 2 hours and you're like, this is pretty good and pretty intense. And then it's like, he must not want you to leave the theater going like, excellent.
Yeah.
He just wants you to leave the theater going, So I'm sitting there in the aisle and a couple sits behind us. It's a smallish theater in Montclair, New Jersey. A couple sits behind us and they shift over one seat, presumably because I'm very tall.
Yes.
But he's not a short guy either. They move over one seat. So I'm in like seat one, Laura's in seat two. Behind me, dude is in seat two, woman is in seat three.
Yeah.
And he has to be one of these fucking jerks.
One of these fucking jerks.
Jerk-offs. Who sits talk show style the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, legs, if you can see this, legs folded over like you're talking to Johnny Carson or Jay Leno. Or is that still who hosts The Tonight Show? I'm old. No. You get what I'm saying.
I do, legs
folded. And I am the tallest person in the theater.
Yeah.
My knees and feet made contact with the chair in front of me during the 2 hour and 30 minute movie exactly zero times.
Mm-hmm.
The person behind me who was being interviewed and trying to show off how relaxed and debonair he was kicked my chair 8 times in the movie because he kept switching his legs. And this is the problem I have, and this is why I have to complain on the podcast and watch Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
What I really want... Oh, look at that. Frankie almost took down the studio.
Yeah, we're still up and running, though.
What I really want is to get up, turn around, and say... Can I do a Don Corleone voice?
Yeah.
You can sit like a man! Johnny Fontaine. Anyway. But I didn't. I just sat there and stewed because... I don't have the non-nuclear option in my arsenal.
I know.
It's either sit and absorb it and wonder why people just can't behave normally.
Yeah.
And how you can kick a man's seat 8 times in a movie and not correct your behavior when 7 of those times the man glares at you.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying a reckoning is coming.
I have to say that it's really a wonderful and yet frightening thing that I've never seen this in our friendship. In the many years of us being closer and closer, I have not seen you in public have a blow up at all. Thank God. I don't know how I would react if I saw the stewing happening in right? Can you think of a time when I was with you where you like were on the like turning red?
When I see you, we're either podcasting or at one birthday party for you.
No, we've gone for walks before, I can remember, like around here where we were, before other recordings where we were like hanging out, getting a slice.
Yeah.
We've gotten dinner before.
We have?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't undermine our friendship.
But that's what I'm saying is that that's what's good about, it's like Laura on the other hand.
Right. Laura's job is basically... She's a mediator at this point.
She's society's last line of defense.
The safety net against the world.
So I'll tell you one. Laura kind of actually enjoyed this, yeah. And she enjoys almost nothing I do. But we were at a play, and God damn it, what was the play? But I bought Twizzlers. I can't remember if I talked. I don't think we were doing the show when this happened. Okay. I may have just talked about it on a Patreon.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm at a play. Oh, and it was like Eureka Day, which got nominated. We both didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was like nominated for Best Revival,
yeah.
I think, at the most recent Tonys.
Yeah.
Neither of us liked it, but I got a Twizzlers. Okay. It's something the theater sells. I didn't bring in Twizzlers.
Yes.
So I'm opening the Twizzlers, and I am very conscious, as you can tell, of not being annoying.
Yeah.
As best I can.
Right.
I have to open the package.
Right.
So I wait for laughter,
yeah,
or good. Something, and I'm like,
that's smart.
Right. It's Shawshank breaking open the pipe when the thunder claps.
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't hear it. But this one woman in front of me keeps looking back every time I reach in for a Twizzler. And mind you, I am making an effort to be quiet.
Yeah.
So on the third time, she looks back, and I'm going to, so I can still face the camera, pretend you're me.
Yeah.
She goes, could you stop that? With that speed and that condescension. And I...
She's on it quick.
And I leaned into her and said, stop what? And she said, making noise. And I said, fuck you. And she went... Now, here's why I felt bad.
Yeah.
And this is why I don't do these things. As angry as I am, my anger is not born... most of my anger is not born from some, like, deficiency or trauma or... It's out of righteousness.
Yeah.
It's out of, why can't you just do the right thing?
Yeah.
That's my... 95% of my anger is from, like, why are you doing that? Don't you realize that's rude? Or don't you realize that's inconsiderate? Can't we have... a considerate society, a more right. considerate society. That's like a lot of what really bothers me. But one of the reasons I don't do things is I am not a fighter, but I don't want to make other people scared.
Right.
I want to make people reconsider how they live their lives.
Right.
But I don't want to be like, you want to do something? Like, I'm literally mad because you're being a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I need to, like, I'm not some CTE afflicted MMA guy who's just like,
right.
What?
Right.
What?
Right.
That's right. Like, just angling, yeah. Just trying to fight. But I felt bad because, of course, this woman's husband, she didn't say anything. And I don't want, but it was like, if he had turned around and said, like, let's step outside, I think I would have and been like, I'll apologize to you. Your wife's very rude. I don't want to fight. I respect you for standing up for your lady, as you should.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think any less of you if you didn't, because this bitch's mouth is probably getting you in a lot of trouble.
Right. Right.
It's like the show I one time went to in Brooklyn, where a comic, well-known comic, very successful, not a household name, but a very successful guy. We'll talk off mic.
Okay, great.
I'm
burning to know.
This woman was heckling at like this like bar show.
Yeah.
And he went back at her and he said something pretty crude, but granted, within the bounds of your heckling, now you get shit on.
Yeah.
And she went up and slapped the comic. Not too hard. The male comic then punched her in the face.
Oh, no.
The boyfriend then just dutifully got up to confront him. Not a big guy, not a tough guy, just doing the work, as we say,
in the
civil rights movement.
Yes, yes, and, yes.
And before he could reach the comic, two male comics jumped him in the audience. You might call one of the comics a member of a legion. One of the assisting comics.
I'm putting the pieces together.
So
that sounds like the New York comedy scene to me.
I remember watching this, and I always think whenever I see this person selling out shows or making tons of money, yeah. I go, zero women punched in the face in 22 years in comedy. I don't know if that gets me a work productivity bonus.
Yeah.
But zero. Zero. And I mean, not just in comedy. Lifetime.
Right.
Never. Fourth grade, kicked a girl in gym class. My father was disgusted with me.
Yeah.
Last time I put hands or feet on a woman.
Yeah.
In a non-seductive way.
Right, right.
Of course.
Right. Of course. I mean, well, you were a Lothari.
Come on, Mike. So that was an example of where I couldn't keep it in. Not that I was challenging it. I was just like, I am golden ruling this. Yeah. I am being as unquestioned. They sell this candy here. Take it up with the theater if you don't like the candy.
Right.
But I'm not, I didn't, you know, anyway, this has gone off the rails. But I just wanted to talk about my family dysfunction and then just another example of a society that even when you're in a theater full of like people in their 50s and 60s and you kind of expect better.
Expect nothing. Yeah.
That's this show's new motto.
Yeah.
Expect nothing.
It's always been the quiet motto of the show, I think. Yeah. Life will give you nothing. Expect nothing.
Yeah. When life gives you lemons, say, hey, usually you give me nothing. Thanks, life.
Or say, ow, these lemons sting my eyes.
Or put them in your mouth and, you know, autoerotic asphyxiate yourself. Anyway, guys, on that really cool note, we're going to take the first break. And we're back. Mike, how was that break?
Not too bad. This is the first break trying to make sure that my dog doesn't either bark at you or, you know, shit in the apartment. Or it's a lot going on over here, but I think we're handling it gracefully.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're now producing a podcast and a dog's life.
Yeah, I know. And the dog's life is much more difficult, frankly. The podcasting stuff I can do with my eyes closed, except for this week when I ruined the audio. But other than that,
last week's audio, and then that's back-to-back weeks with no clips to promote the episode.
That's not true. I gave you two clips on the first week. They were a little bit behind, but I had a launch for another.
No, I'm not complaining. I'm just stating facts. That's all. It's okay. I have a robust social media presence that would really benefit from clips. But it's, you know, I'd prefer a world where they go get the full episode, where they show that commitment.
Right.
But we both know we don't live in that world, Mike.
Yeah, so you don't think that's possible. You don't think it's possible that they're going to look. They need the clips.
We all need the clips. That's just society. I said that I think we are in now a shitty version of the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Not some bullshit, is this a simulation? I hate people who pose that question with any seriousness.
Well, it's like fake philosophical nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we are basically these bodies being like nourishing social media billionaires.
Yeah.
Like we are that metaphorically. Like, you know, I look at it. Does anybody do comedy anymore for comedy?
Right. Or just for the algorithm.
Like doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
So obviously the big news this week, and what I like about this podcast is less like the New York Times and more like the New Yorker. Like you get like in-depth, robust discussion.
That's right.
Like with a few days to marinate over the breaking news issue.
Yeah.
Now, Stephen Colbert, for me, one of the greats in my life in comedy. He got fired. His show, well, basically, The Late Show is being canned. It's not quite the institution, obviously, that the Tonight Show is. You know, with Jimmy Fallon stewarding that ship into an iceberg.
Right, lucky us.
Why
couldn't the Tonight Show get canceled?
it probably won't.
No, it won't. I don't know their numbers, but I'm assuming the Tonight Show makes money still just because of the name alone.
But even if it doesn't, I feel like SNL, the Tonight Show, are kind of comedy versions, and I said this on a friend's podcast, Chris Lambert, the Mundane Festival, but it's kind of to me, the late night shows are, especially the Tonight Show and Saturday Night Live, I guess, have reached this level where it's like, is it just about profit, or are you more like comedy, like a, the news version of comedy, like how news used to be a loss because they viewed it as their responsibility to provide news as right. part of their license. And now they don't. Now they view it.
I have the answer for you.
What's the answer?
SNL definitely still makes money.
Okay.
For sure. I mean, it's enough of like a legacy brand
yeah.
that it's the, and it's like even SNL is in this position where even if it's not making serious money the way that it might have in like the late 70s, I guess, or like whenever it was like the hot commodity through its like timeline, I think you still have enough of that like SNL 50 or whatever they did, 40.
Those were awesome. 50.
Yeah, 50.
The concert so like, and the special were really actually stunning.
I think
like
when
how
you,
good they were.
I think when you have NBC, which is like not really in a great place anyway, hasn't been for a long time. I think anything that gets all of these big names in one place, like there's still enough of a cachet with SNL. And I think The Tonight Show probably has that too. But I think Colbert's show is kind of where it's sort of, they got rid of Tomlinson's show right after it. I think she wanted to leave. I don't know the whole story there, but I think it was kind of like a mutual.
It was down. Once they got rid of Tom Snyder, it was downhill.
When was that? Late 80s?
90s.
90s? Okay.
He was, let's just put it this way, the least likely late night show host you could imagine.
Oh, I remember. Tom Snyder's show was like a weird late night show,
wasn't
it?
He's so dry. Yeah. He was like a serious guy.
Right. It was like more serious Dick Cavett, wasn't it?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was on the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. I never got the Late Show.
Yeah.
So, good riddance.
Right.
That's my feeling on anything I don't get in comedy. I pissed on the grave of Caroline's when that no I didn't
yeah,
but they we're at this like what I find interesting about this point, because the people who complain about cancel culture now, financially they had an excuse, you know, the same way we discussed how Elliot Spitzer gave his enemies an excuse by sleeping with hookers,
right?
The show is not making money. It's right. losing tens of millions of dollars a year.
I saw in the post. Now you take that with a grain of salt, but I saw that it was like somewhere between 40-50 million a year.
And the cover story was actually a plane with Mamdani's face yeah. going into the Ed Sullivan Theater. Just that's the New York Post right. for you.
And that's why I'm saying take the number with a grain of salt, because it might be inflated for all I know. But if that's true, that's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah. That said, of yeah. course, it's also I think what we saw with 60 Minutes. It's hard to separate the we will settle a frivolous, completely bullshit lawsuit and give Trump $16 million
yeah.
so that our deal goes through.
Right.
And once again, gotta recommend one of those essential movies that I think I mentioned, The Insider.
Yeah, The Insider.
So the more truth we tell, the worse it is. Are we journalists or are we businessmen? But it is. That movie is incredibly instructive for this moment.
Yeah.
Because it is that conflict of business and in this case, entertainment, in 60 Minutes case, journalism. And 60 Minutes was like, felt like they were universally like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, the guy, the executive producer quit. And it's one of these things. And now I remembered actually where I was going to take this as a launching pad, the Colbert thing. But it's one of these things where people, we're so lost now in culture wars, I guess, that everybody's gloating on one side about Colbert being gone. The man is an insane talent. I know you did not like the pivot he made on The Late Show.
Not at all.
Right.
Because he was one of my comedy heroes, really.
He still should be, of course. The Colbert Report is still...
That is an iconic masterpiece.
One of the great TV shows. And I believe, all due respect to the Daily Show's place in comedy and in political comedy, but just on individual metrics, The Colbert Report, as somebody who does a weekly show as somebody else flawlessly in character for many years, I sort of, you know, there's a kinship between me and Colbert. Do we live in the same area of New Jersey? Yes. do we both have iconic shows where we embody a conservative character flawlessly? Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, so this is hitting me a little harder than most.
Yeah.
Because will they come for me next? They've come for Colbert. Will they come for Covan?
Right. But so the my opinion on this.
No, they will not. I think they will not come for me. It's my just, fans won't come for me, Mike. Why would my enemies?
Your enemies consider you dead already. So it's funny that your point is well taken. However, this is the thing that I actually that bothers me about Colbert's show. And I was actually talking about it with a friend in the group chat because we were talking about how we felt about it, too, as former Colbert fans and comedy fans. I think that the reason why, and this is coming from somebody who is aligned with him politically, I'm obviously like a hardcore leftist too, but I think that now, granted, he's on CBS and not Comedy Central in 2010 anymore. It's a different time and it is a different broadcaster. But I didn't like when I got very excited when he got the gig originally because I was too. Like, oh my god, he's back.
I was excited, but you know? I was sad that Colbert Report, you know.
Yeah, but even when he announced, like, I'm not going to be doing characters, it's just I'm going to do it like me, I still was just like, man, this guy's so funny that it doesn't matter. Like, I'm just excited. And then the deeper, I don't know how much of it had to do with just, like, you know, standard Trump backlash, which has just ruined every aspect of comedy for the last almost 10 years now, in my opinion. Other than not every aspect. Hold on.
The people are probably seeing my facial expressions.
Not you, JL.
Oh.
You've been great. I just mean, but there are, as we've discussed before, nobody can stack up to the JL Covan Trump impression.
Right.
You're in a rarefied air. I just think a lot of jokes about Trump and sort of the impulse. It's Colbert's show to me became like scrolling on Twitter. Mm. With like the worst fucking hacks that you could follow, and it was disappointing because it's almost the situation where I believe that he can do so much better and be so much funnier, and he's just kind of doing this like almost like I hate to phrase it like this, but this like leftist operative hack shtick, and this is somebody who like is a leftist operative. Like, as somebody that is like on that side, to see it's almost ignorant to me to be on this side of things and not feel like he is essentially like gut filled at this point.
Wow.
For the left.
Wow.
That's how I feel about
wow.
it.
Wow.
And he became a place.
He went there.
To me, he became a place where it was like a safe space for admittedly people that I love and admire in show business to just kind of go and like vent about Trump. And though I think that it's fine for that space to exist, I don't find anything more boring, really. Like I love Nate. We've talked on this podcast before how much I love Nathan Lane. He's like another one of my big influences in comedy.
Your shirt is unbuttoned 4 buttons.
My shirt is I am paying tribute to the Birdcage.
Yeah.
With how Robin Williams dressed. That's Absolutely. How I dressed in the summer with my chest hair out. But you know, I'd be excited to see
what was
him.
His name in the Birdcage? Brad Marchand. No,
No. It was you're putting me on the spot. It was Armand.
Armand. Yeah, right. Yeah. I knew it had an
Armand Coleman. Armand Goldman. But they called him Coleman. It's Coleman. But I like again Nathan Lane, Bex Bialystock, The Birdcage, two of like my favorite things that ever existed. And I would watch clips of him on Colbert's show, and it would kind of be just like, you know, listen, I'm happy that Nathan Lane's gonna go on television and have a place where he feels safe to talk about whatever. But I just think that, like, I remember watching just being so disappointed. I was just like, oh my god, more of this. Like, more of this kind of just like, ugh.
Now, counterpoint. You
know? Yes.
Colbert was third in the ratings when he took over Letterman.
Yep.
Behind Kimmel and Fallon. And Kimmel is still the guy I wish I could have written for.
Yeah.
I would have had to do the least adjusting to my own sort of sardonic, dry, annoyed with society style.
Yeah.
But once Trump got elected, Fallon went from 1 to 2.
Yep.
Because people were like, yeah, we're not in the mood for the people who watch late night TV, at least, are not in the mood for, hey, Hey, Trump, come here, Trump.
Yeah, but... Well, right, because there's that whole thing with
hustling
him.
The
head. Yeah, right.
And Colbert leaned in, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think it fits Colbert's values. So I'm not saying he did this for corporate, but when he went from 3-1, we've all seen those behind the scenes of going, you know what's hot? Like, right now, you're killing it with the Trump.
Yes, why?
So
totally.
To pretend like it might have been a solo decision or not encouraged at some point once they realized it was working, because he's been number one
right.
since Trump. So, like, at the same, you know what I mean? Like, it's, we would hate it if corporate was telling him to do the opposite of what he believed.
Right.
Here, it's like, corporate wants me to do what I basically believe. I have no problem with that.
And I agree with you 100%. Obviously, you do what's working. And it's like kind of leaning into his wheelhouse, as he's right. got a reputation of being a political guy. But I just think that it's like primarily Trump's fault. I think that that Trump fatigue exists. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that, like, the Trump strategy of, like, always be in the media and always be blitzing the media constantly with so much shit that they just can't keep up, it does put creative people and comedians oftentimes, I think, in a position where, like, you're exhausting your audience.
Always be B, C, cunty. Always be cunty. That is Trump's motto. Put the coffee down. Coffee's for MAGA.
I think I just had to get some styrofoam out of Frankie's mouth. Excuse me. I think the unfortunate thing is that, like, to me as a viewer, I just think that it exhausted my tolerance for Colbert just kind of doing. Because listen, the Colbert report, as brilliant as it was from, like, a political satire point of view, he also had enough variety outside. Like, there were other bits that they did on that show that were, like, classic bits. Some of the stuff that you couldn't do now, like when he would do Ching Chong Ding Dong, which was so funny, but, like, he wouldn't do that shit now. So you get put in this position.
Well, I guess you're going to want to leave comedy talk today, then, because that's exactly what we're doing.
But I think that you're putting him in this position where, like, because you're pushing him, because I do think you're right. I think CBS probably pushed him and go, like, more Trump, more Trump. People love the Trump stuff.
Yeah.
It just puts you in this position to do something that's going to get very tired.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look up and it's kind of like.
But not me.
No.
Everybody else, but not me.
Not you, because it's a different thing. Like, you get to kind of mimic Trump as Trump goes, because you're portraying Trump. It's different when you're doing. Imagine just, like, let's say that Colbert didn't have the show.
Yeah.
And he was just on the road, and he just had, like, 9 years now of just sort of the same sort of tired Trump jokes. And then when the jokes aren't working, he leans in extra hard to. Remember when Kate McKinnon did the thing on SNL where she just played the piano?
Yeah.
That stuff.
That was,
it's like when the jokes don't work, you lean into the crisis.
That was actually child separation, all the bad things Trump has done. The worst thing to happen in the era of Trump was Kate McKinnon.
I agree. 100%. So that's why I kind of feel the way that I feel about Colbert. And I'm more just kind of disappointed in him than anything, because he was somebody that I saw. It's a fall from grace. Not so different from Chappelle. The difference is that, like, Chappelle was one of my guys, and then I started feeling differently. My viewpoints, I think, just started changing from where his went. Where with Colbert, I just kind of got upset.
Just because I'm friends with J.K. Rowling doesn't mean you can't be my fan.
With Colbert, I got a little upset because I just thought that he could do better.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Like, there's,
but I feel like, to be honest, taking the Late Show was always, it is like a per se compromising decision. Not to say it's bad, but you are now joining a corporate brand.
Yes.
You are, you have, now, did it have to go this far? Of course not. But you are joining, you're becoming the face of a late night show of a station. No, you're no longer just I'm just the comedy guy doing comedy.
Right.
Like I'm this is what I do. To me, the best guy, and I mean this with no disrespect because I love Colbert, but I've always thought Kimmel.
But
he's very anti-Trump too. But I always thought he kind of brought really good sketch work into the I haven't watched it in a couple of years.
I just want to push back on something that you said about, because I do agree that there is an extent where you're the face and you have a responsibility, and you're also the other thing that I think people tend to forget is that when you're the face, you also, like in Gary Shandling, if you ever watch Gary Shandling, there's this whole through line for a lot of that show about how
you mean
played by Gary Shandling, where there's so many storylines where he is the boss of the show in a lot of ways, and he's got to keep the people in the office working. Like, he doesn't want to... If the show goes off the air, those people lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also a part of Colbert's responsibility as well. And I think, though, to what you were just saying about playing it super safe, like, the show... He inherited the show from Letterman, who famously didn't really do that.
But I think it's also when you create something, when it's your thing, you know, he also lost every year to Jay Leno.
Right.
But late night TV was still more a part of people's lives at the time. So he could afford to be the kind of authenticity and number two guy.
Right.
Because it was like he's got the cachet.
Right.
We're still making money. He was
like
the cool.
It was like Letterman's show was a little more edgy. Kind of what Conan's late show was.
I thought, you know? See, and that's, I remember when he got promoted to Tonight Show, all I kept thinking was, I know that you want that promotion. It makes sense. You want to be the guy. You've earned it. You've been in the pipeline. You've worked for all these shows on NBC for so many years, but you don't, I don't, 11:30 NBC, it just, you know, Carson and even Leno, they were great at what they were supposed to do. You know, Carson was especially awesome.
Yeah.
But Leno, for everybody shitting on Leno, and it's like the guy was number one for like 16 years.
Right.
Like he did the job. That's like Tim Duncan. It's like, I mean, he won all the championships and is in the Hall of Fame. Like what, like why you wish he had been more vocal or like more flair? Sorry.
Yeah.
And Conan, I always thought it was a bridge too far. I really grew to like him a lot, but I thought the Tonight Show brand isn't ready for as to be quirky.
Right.
And Letterman, because it was his show. And because more people, like, you could afford, because more people watch late night television.
Yeah.
And what I was going to say is, I mean, that's the other element to this is Colbert, I think, yes, it's losing money. Yes, he said these political things. But I think the third leg of this stool is people are in their own silos, not just politically, but culturally now.
Yeah.
We don't have, like, I wish late night television and news were comfortable being money losers.
Yeah.
Because I feel like just like news is something that you need objective sources, but not when there's a right-wing media system whose main job is just to tell you you can't trust the news so that you come to us for bullshit.
Yeah.
Like that is half their job in the right-wing news is to tell you don't trust these things that generations of people have trusted and we've moved on as a society. No, don't trust them. That's where it really starts. And then with comedy, I wish late night TV and even SNL, as much as I've been hard on it in certain years.
Yeah.
I almost wish, just like I wish comedy had we all check in with this. Not everybody, but more people just check in like the pulse of comedy and the pulse of what's going on. And we don't. So it's losing viewers. It's losing money. People listen to their podcasts and, you know, the Rogans like have much more influence and bigger listening, but they're not providing like really much substance.
Those things aren't really a show.
Entertainment wise or news wise, there's not that much substance there. It's community.
Yeah.
Like people no longer, there it is. Now we've got, it always takes us about
22 minutes,
50 minutes to get to a point. But I feel like this is representative of just other things that are going wrong in society. It's just this is this prong of the problem, which is people are seeking community, on like their terms and their, and like, so they're willing to sacrifice facts for community.
Yeah.
They're willing to sacrifice, you know, gathering around the TV for a cell phone or chat room community. There, so you, I'll put on headphones, or if I'm most people, I'll go out in public with no headphones and watch and listen to things. But I just feel like the end of late night TV is one of those things that people will gloat, that the right wing will gloat. And it's so funny that the idea of the right wing gloating should be one of these things where we say, oh, yes, another example of you not living by the principles you claim to have, which is, do you really like the idea of government intimidating a private company into firing an artist for free speech? Wow, that feels like it just violated everything you always bitch about and complain about, like in this fever dream of like the government's coming for us. Freedom is dying. Yeah. Artistry is dying. I don't see a lot. I mean, I'm not denying there might be some voices out there, but it doesn't seem to be anything beyond ha 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 Colbert.
Yeah.
And then they cite Gutfeld, which is, you know, it's tough crowd for the brain dead.
Yeah.
That show is really not funny. I always get offended, not when comedians go on there, but when I'm like, oh, you actually check your, like, you're doing things that aren't as funny as what you do on stage or online to appease this weird current events show where, like, obviously there is a party line. It feels like something put out by, like, Putin. Like, yeah. We put out comedy, pro-Russia comedy show. But they always cite Gutfeld. They're like, Gutfeld gets better ratings. Gutfeld's on in prime time.
Right.
Like, that's the hilarious thing to me. Gutfeld is in prime time. And they act like it's on at the same time.
Right.
And so, but people go, well, Gutfeld's doing better than all of them. Yeah, and if Colbert was on at 10 p.m., he'd be doing better. So, I just think it's just... I don't feel bad for Colbert. I mean, it sucks.
I don't think there's a reason to feel bad for him.
No. I mean, no, but I don't mean... I mean, I think anytime... I think if you weren't going to quit your job and your job ends and this, you know, sort of becomes part of your legacy, and I feel bad, not feel bad in a way I feel bad for a homeless man.
Yes.
I just mean, they're though, it's, you know, and when I see Scott Jennings on CNN going, part of Stephen Colbert's legacy is he killed the Late Show. That's going to like be what the right wing just spews from here on out. But I think it's just another place where we are abandoning what used to be a thing we talked about or a thing we went to or watched, or you might have been a Leno or Letterman person, and it's just another thing in society, entertainment to be specific, but emblematic of more things, where it's like, there goes another shared space, and we think we're going to be happier or better off as we have further and further abandoned shared spaces for our like niche, delivered to us via the algorithm, feeds us what we want, but not really. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. And I just think, I wish somebody could point out the hypocrisy besides me, somebody with a platform and an audience and a fan base. But the idea that, like, it's the 5 millionth example of conservatives gloating as their own alleged principles are abandoned and destroyed and ignored and violated. So I'm a big Colbert fan. I think my biggest problem was when he got the Late Show. He came out, John Batiste was his band leader, and he did these like big high kicks. He came out, and I remember feeling, I wanted to say, I wish I knew him or could say, somebody gave you a note to abandon that. You did it for like a month and then you stopped. And to me, it woke me up. Because I wanted to watch your show, but I'm getting a little tired. But when you came out high kicking to the band, I was like, okay, I'm up.
Yeah.
I'm a little perked up.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's the first note. There was the first, like, people aren't responding to the kicking. It's not. And I was like, I'm responding to the kicking.
Right. Right.
But this is.
The focus group should be you. And then all the things that you like, they just do the opposite.
Yes.
JL seemed to really like the kicking. So cut that out.
Yeah. JL loves the Trump stuff. Oh God! But
our show is dead.
Yeah, but we're it I was shocked by it, but then we live in a country where like Trump is gloating and we act, and people act like this is normal. Like, yeah, he's not putting Colbert up to a firing squad, but this is still so gross and vulgar.
Yeah.
And CBS can go fuck themselves, honestly. Like, I canceled, like I told you, I canceled Paramount Plus. I wish I could say it was purely for ideological
moral say it now. Reasons. Yeah, ideological reasons.
I mean, it was. I mean, there was nothing else I wanted to watch on the platform also.
Yeah.
But I really did it because you're not getting any more of my money. But they'll I don't know what they're going to turn that into. It's like Trump's buddy buys it and then Gutfeld in prime time. Like, so once again, everybody, another like norm, another communal space, another communal institution is going, and we're going to replace it with something worse and more self-centered and more algorithm driven. And we will continue to wonder, why are we so mad? And why are we so stupid? And why are we suck? And why is America shit? And then we'll blame Democrats.
Yeah. It's a good plan.
There you go. We'll blame Democrats. As Democrats bail water out of the Titanic, we'll blame them for not bringing big enough buckets onto the ship. So that's my take or whatever the fuck that was on Colbert. We'll be back after this break with Mike. Comedy talk.
Oh boy.
And we're back. Mike, how was your break?
You know, relaxing. Pretty good. Good.
Hanging out with Frankie.
Hanging out with Frankie, making sure that he's not eating any styrofoam or barking at anybody. And yeah.
Well, now that we're doing comedy talk, he obviously is going to have to
this
be
put him
more
to sleep.
Of an, no, he's going to have to be more of an emotional support dog for you. Because we know how much you hate this.
Yeah.
Okay, I got two punch. I want you to pick for the official, but two punchdowns of the week. And I'm posting fewer jokes these days online because comedy. Well, comedy's dead.
Yeah.
Videos are king.
Yeah.
And my fans are bad.
Yeah.
So here's the joke I posted. My dog rushes. Dog theme.
Yep.
My dog rushes out of every elevator ride like she's never seen The Departed.
Okay.
And then this guy responded on Threads. Classic. Ending was a little overdone, in my opinion. So somebody's been waiting to get their take out
on The Departed.
On an ending that lots of people have shit on for The Rat.
Yeah.
But okay. You could just giving it a heart.
Yeah.
I don't know. This isn't Martin Scorsese's suggestion box.
Yeah.
And then the other one was I posted a video where Trump had written in a letter to Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
Enigmas never age. This was like his sign off on one of his weird letters or notes to Epstein back in the day. So I did a video where Trump was explaining that he never drew pictures for Epstein, and I played Enigma Sadness Part 1 in the background, which was like a little Easter egg. Many people got it. One person said, "The music is distracting." And I said, "You're missing the joke." But this person wrote, I posted that video. And anytime you start a comment to a video with actually,
it's going to be big trouble.
Actually, I understand Enigma is an anagram for Amjean, which apparently means a young girl. I Googled this and Amjean didn't come up, so it could be false, but I heard Crystal Ball say it and she's pretty on point with her info. Now, Crystal Ball, I can't. She's one of these, like, I hate, I'm a left, I'm too left, so I hate Democrats. It's Bernie or die for me. But I'm also like, going to occasionally say something like on the other side just because my main goal is to shit on Democrats kind of chicken. Her name is Crystal Ball. Your parents suck.
Mm-hmm.
That's not cute. But that one bothered me because it was like, I just posted a video and you started it with actually, and the person wrote back to me after I said, actually, question mark. They were, well, I was adding on to your video. Maybe I should have said additionally. And I'm like, well, yeah, actually makes it sound like I'm wrong.
Yeah.
It's a fucking comedy video impersonating Trump talking about pictures. I can't be wrong.
Yeah.
So my question is, I obviously kind of tilted one way with my emotion on this one, but
yes.
Which one would you say? The Departed comment, which was mundane, but still just
no, 100% the other one bothered you more. That's the punchdown of the week.
Okay. So, yeah. So actually,
yeah.
Okay. Actually, you're the punchdown of the week. Congratulations. Actually, it wasn't really a punchdown. It was just an annoying comment. Okay. Two-time winner. You just became a two-time winner immediately. Instant two-time winner. Special that I watched, and then we'll get out of here, folks. I watched Postmortem on Netflix, Sarah Silverman's Emmy-nominated comedy special. Now, I'm a fan of Sarah Silverman. I've always found her very funny. I've always liked the kind of fake chipperness she brings to her persona, like as she's saying dark things. And this was a very, I don't want to say it was different, because for me, my favorite comic late stage changing it up was Jim Gaffigan, Dark Pale. Now he reverted back with his recent Hulu special to kind of, don't worry guys, I'm Gaffigan again.
Yeah.
But Dark Pale was so good because he was still Jim Gaffigan, just not giving a fuck.
Yeah.
It was really tight, really strong stuff. So I love, that was my favorite special of a like whatever 2 years ago. That was my number one of the year because it was just, oh shit, it's still him, still his structure, still his tone, but he's going like he was doing like funeral jokes and like is it cake reference, like going like is that a dead person or is it cake, just funny whatever, funny but dark and not completely avoiding politics. Silverman is kind of similar here. It's still her. It's still smiling and saying the occasional dark thing. But for me, it felt like, because it's about her deceased father and stepmother who died 9 days apart. And it felt, and I wouldn't say she did this. I'm just saying how it feels. And I'm probably wrong. She's her own artist. She does what she wants. But it had this feeling of like, you know what's big right now? Kind of true to life, confessional, opening up your heart a little bit. That sells right now. We're not asking to go one woman show. Don't go that far, but let us in a little more. And one of the things I like about Sarah Silverman is don't let me in. You can, but I've grown accustomed to being like, I'm not going to be let in. I'm here. I'm going to get laughs. It's going to be dark and they're going to be really clever. And her jokes never quite seem edgelordy. You know what I mean? Like they're dark, but it never feels like I went, like she never will go, I went there.
Yeah.
Cause she doesn't have to. She never does it just for that. But it's like a pleasant special. I mean, the Emmys seem to often get it wrong. I don't think they ever get it right, really, with their choices. It's like, did Patton Oswalt put out something? Put him on. Gaffigan, of course. Bargatze, yes. He's our new Gaffigan. And then it's like there's two slots open. They're like, Sarah Silverman's pretty fucking famous. Well,
yeah,
she's getting the nomination. It's a very nice special, and I don't mean nice like she abandons her dark sense of humor. It's more like paced. Like her dark humor is usually a little more bang, bang, bang. This is more, here's a longer bit with a joke at the end, and it's dark or this. So I liked it. You know what I mean? It was like if it was pass, fail, it's a pass, solid.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe just maybe somebody who's not a Sarah Silverman fan, like one way or the other, would really like this. I think I have too much Sarah Silverman baggage to be like, it's a change, and it's still very competent and has some. There are a few LOLs, but you know, I like your earlier stuff better. Now I'm the punchdown douchebag. But so there's your special, guys. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Please go to your podcast, whatever, and give it 5 stars. It only takes 20 seconds of your time and costs you $0. Subscribe to the YouTube. And then I will be in Newark August 1st. Queens for a Trump show August 7th. St. Catharines, Ontario, August 23rd. All that stuff is on my website, jlcomedy.com. If you want to support the show and get extra stuff and really get completely unfiltered me. That's right. This is like some pulp.
Yeah.
You want to get full pulp Grove Stand Tropicana? Patreon.com/JLCovan. But thank you everybody for listening. I hope the sound was good this week. If it wasn't, there'll be hell to pay for Mike. So until next time, see you next Thursday.
Nice.